Hey, Matt Rothschild here with another episode of the Wisconsin Forward podcast on the Civic Media Radio Network. In the wake of the amazing No Kings rallies on October 18th, I want to explore the importance and the utility of nonviolent protest with you. To start off, I grabbed off the internet what Timothy Snyder of On Tyranny had to say about this on the morning of that rally. He was outside when he recorded it, so the first few seconds are a little windy, but bear with him. It's just under a minute long.
Hey, it's Tim Snyder. Why do we protest? Number one, constitutionally, it's our right. Number two, morally, we have the right to show what we think is right. Number three, socially, by showing up, we show those around us that we don't think this is normal. Number four, practically, nonviolent resistance, nonviolent opposition works to hold off the worst. And number five, politically, because by being at a protest, you're cooperating with others, taking a step towards more cooperation, towards finding a way out to something better.
I also wanted to share with you what Ruth Ben-Ghiat, author of Strong Men, had to say that morning in her one-minute ode to protest. So please take a listen.
Let everybody know that however you are protesting peacefully or supporting those who are out in the streets, you are observing one of the fundamental principles of resistance, and that is to use the tools and spaces available to you while you have them, because you don't know if they'll be available tomorrow. But as protest that goes on in full-on dictatorships such as Belarus and China tells us, there's always space for action. What we are also doing with these community-based local protests is turning areas that have been made into sites of terror and brutality into spaces of solidarity and unity. And this is a very important lesson, that we determine the climate, the moral climate, the psychological, emotional climate of the spaces that we inhabit. These are our spaces. And so we are turning out in numbers to reclaim those spaces from state security forces that are brutalizing us. And finally, each one of you protesting is encouraging others to do the same. And remember that in this case, it is a protest movement that is building. And what matters is that more and more people turn out every time. We have the momentum. We are saying that this is not who we are. This is not the America that we believe in and that we know.
Now, with that table setting, I'd like to bring on my first guest, Carlene Betchen, one of the best grassroots organizers in Wisconsin, who helped put together the big No Kings rally in Madison on October 18th. Carlene, welcome back to the Wisconsin Forward podcast.
Thanks, Matt. It's always nice to see you.
Great to see you. Great to hear your voice. So you were one of the organizers of the No Kings rally. Why are big protests so important?
That's a great question, because people ask me that all the time, so I'm actually prepared. Social proof. We are stuck in our houses, stuck in our jobs. Many, many, many people just scrolling through stuff that feels endless and mind-boggling and confusing, and they become more and more and more isolated from the people around them. They don't know who they can talk to about the things that they're feeling. You come out for a rally, you take somebody you know with you, and then you see some other people you know, and maybe a lot of people you don't know, but there's this enormous energy that says, I am not alone. There are other people that are feeling the way I'm feeling. I can do something about this. This is not just me feeling this. And there is nothing like that sort of affirmation that I'm not crazy,
right,
that I'm not alone, and I have power.
Yeah, it was great to be at the protests. And you mentioned the scrolling. I know Judge Everett Mitchell talked a lot about that in his phenomenal speech here.
Yes.
In Madison. If you're listening to this, you should pause and go look up Everett Mitchell's talk.
Yeah,
it was at the No Kings rally. It was mm-hmm. It was tremendous. But yes, this sense of overcoming isolation and not being alone and despondent, because that's how you feel if you're just alone trying to take in what's happening. You know, I've had a couple calls from people over the last 2 weeks who I used to know in my previous jobs who just wanted to have lunch with me mm-hmm. because they have no one to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is part of the issue. And when you go to the protest, you got a lot of people to talk to.
Yes, you do.
And the energy is so positive. I mean, the creative signs, the costumes, everything is just so wonderful. We had some of that back in the protests against Act 10, mm-hmm. and you're seeing a lot more of it now, and it's just wonderful to behold. Now, there were protests not just in Madison and Milwaukee, but all over the state. How many protests were there, actually? I didn't
there
count up.
There were 86 protests in the state of Wisconsin, 138,500 people across just our state showed up. I don't know if you went to Stoughton before you came up here.
I did.
Yeah, I heard that there were almost 1,000 people in Stoughton.
Yeah, it looked like about 750 people. In Stoughton. Actually, I started the day in Monona. Monona had one at 9 o'clock. I went from Monona to McFarland to Stoughton, just went down 51
Good
south.
For you. Good for you.
And to take in, because I think smaller protests in towns and cities that aren't Madison or Milwaukee, the big ones, mm-hmm. are as important as the big ones, because really, then neighbor to neighbor, you're doing politics.
Right, exactly.
People see you who know you. Mm-hmm. The next time they see you at the supermarket, they're going to say, hey, I saw you at the protest, or why were you at the protest? Or, and then it's just thrilling to see other people who you didn't know were on your side. I was at the McFarland protest, and a guy we call Mustache Mike in our poker game was there. I had no idea he was on the same page as I was.
You know, that's a really good example of, here's somebody you know, and you don't know if you can talk to them about these things, right? And then you see them there, and it's like, oh, wow, we have this in common, and now we can do some things together about it. That's what these protests are about.
Yeah, I thought that was really neat to see him there, and we had a nice conversation. We'd never talked politics before. A lot of people in our card game are right wing, so that's one of the reasons we don't. But yeah, it was great to see people I knew who are already committed to fighting authoritarianism, and then see people I didn't know who were in the fight with me. And that was so encouraging. And we need the encouragement, because just sitting home and watching the news, watching cable TV, or taking the news in on the internet is just debilitating, paralyzing.
Yeah. I think I've talked to you about this before on your show, that I've had to just really be conscious about the kinds of news I take in and how much of it I take in, because it is overwhelming. So, you know, there's sources like this one. There's Substack with all kinds of really good people writing there. Heather Cox Richardson, of course, she has her thing that she sends out every day, but also Jen Rubin on The Contrarian, and other folks who are, I'm finding myself more and more agreeing with Paul Krugman. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
I'm just like, okay, I didn't think we had much in common. But he even commented, he went to the New York City protest and commented on how affirming it was and how much he just really loved seeing people there who were joyful and excited, but also really angry. And I think that's one of the things that is a mobilizer versus despairing, getting angry about things and saying, I got to effing do something about this, and getting out and doing it in concert with other people.
Yeah, anger is a good energy source, and we need to harness it in a nonviolent way.
Absolutely.
In our protests. So how did you and the other organizers pull off these incredible rallies?
Well, first of all, there are three or four of the groups that this is our third mass rally. So we did Hands Off in April. We did the first No Kings in June. And this is the third one. So that's Oregon Area Progressives, which I'm part of, Badger Collective, which Badger Collective is doing a lot of really good kind of mass movement things. And they know a lot about safety and security and how to pull off a rally. And then two Indivisible groups, Indivisible Madison East and Indivisible Dane County. The Raging Grannies were part of our planning this time, and also the DSA. So, you know, we had a group that met on a regular basis, and fortunately this time we have more time. Each time we've had more time, and so that's been really helpful. So we've learned what we're good at, and we've kind of delegated ourselves into those jobs, and it's not without frustration. Because anytime you work collaboratively across groups, you're going to have, you know, some frayed nerves now and then. But at the end of the day, we're all on the same team, and so we're taking this week off. We're going to have a potluck next week and celebrate and debrief, and so that'll be good.
I'm all for celebrating our victories. And did those organizations connect with the local organizers in all those cities and towns across Wisconsin, or was that spontaneous?
No, that was spontaneous. So Indivisible has a weekly mass call on Thursday afternoons. And so once they, along with Move On and Working Families Party, other organizations decided when on the October 18th date, then they made resources available. And so there were calls to help with that, all kinds of resources on the Indivisible website for folks. And so one of the things they said early on is if you have to travel an hour to a protest, you should have one of your own.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. So I think that has been really encouraging for a lot of folks. And then there is an organizer for Indivisible who works with Wisconsin and Illinois, and she's fabulous. She's Liz Hayes. She's over in Milwaukee. And so she's been super supportive as well.
One question I have on these big rallies is, how do we get the people who are attending those rallies to get more involved afterwards, either to join organizations like Indivisible or League of Women Voters.
Or Oregon Area Progressives.
Oregon Area Progressives. I mean, that little mighty organization.
That's my group. Yeah.
That mighty group just south of where I live. I live in Oregon. So, yeah, how do we get people to join up and get more involved? Because it's going to take more than just attending these big rallies.
Right. Yeah, you're exactly right. So one of the things that we did this time, I think better than in the past, is that we had little slips of paper and big posters with a QR code that goes to a link tree that had all of the organizations that helped sponsor some immediate actions that needed to be taken. One on a anti-Semitism bill in the state legislature had a hearing yesterday that would really shut down free speech. So, you know, asking people to submit comment also on the special education cuts. So immediate actions people could take, organizations they could get involved with, and then also the other sponsoring organizations. So a lot of ways that people can sign up. And then there were folks just walking around signing people up to do things.
Oh,
so
good.
That was good as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, we need that. I mean, people are hungry to do things. Mm-hmm. And then there's another group of people who just attended the rally and didn't know that there are other places that they can
absolutely
hook into.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to grab those people.
Yes, we need
to build this movement
yes.
bigger and bigger all the way down. Trump, of course, and his mouthpieces called these rallies.
Yeah, don't even say it. Don't even say it.
I'm going to say it.
Because they're so wrong. They're so wrong.
Why are they wrong?
Because, just as you and I said, people were joyful. They were excited. There was a lot of camaraderie. They're angry. Yeah, angry for sure. They're angry. But these are people who are the most patriotic among us. Right,
people. There were a lot of American flags, that's for
there
sure.
There were, a big one right down the middle of East Washington Avenue. Got a great aerial shot of that.
And at McFarland and Stoughton and Monona, there were lots of American flags.
Yeah, yeah. So these are people who love our country, who want democracy to work, a multiracial, multigenerational, multilingual, multireligious, or a-religious democracy that is not run with an authoritarian fist shutting down anything that doesn't agree. That's fascism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we're facing. Fascism, authoritarianism, call it what you want. It's not democracy.
It is, exactly. It is not democracy.
Now, Trump has threatened to crack down on what he calls far left groups, and including in that definition, he mentioned by name Indivisible, mm-hmm. which is crazy because mm-hmm. Indivisible is a pretty vanilla group.
I don't think that Ezra and Leah would like for you to call them vanilla.
Well, I admire the work they're doing, but they are not, far left crazy groups at all. And they're consciously engaging in nonviolence themselves and teaching nonviolence.
Absolutely.
And pledging nonviolence.
Yes,
so the
they
idea
are.
That they're somehow a threat to anybody is kind of a joke. Well, they're a really important part of this mass movement against Trump. But I just wonder, you were working with people from Indivisible. Mm-hmm. Did they feel like that they were under threat from the federal government?
So I think we're kidding ourselves if we don't all feel under threat. All of us in our freedoms
That's
are
real.
Being threatened.
Mm-hmm.
And so, right after Trump was elected, Oregon Area Progressives had what are we going to do now meeting. And one of the things that came up was, do you really think we should do this? Do you really think we should put our pictures out there? Do you really think we should? And it was like, hell yeah. Excuse me, but look around this room. We were all middle-aged, middle-class white people.
And even still, fear was in the room.
Oh, yeah, fear was in the room. And I think for many people in the room, it was the first time they'd felt real fear. And my response to that was, if we can't do it, how the hell can we expect our black and brown brothers and sisters to do this? How can we expect immigrant folks to step up and be at the lead? This is the time when we have to step up. We white people have to step up.
You know, it's funny you mentioned
brave.
That. I'm sorry to interrupt, but you jogged a memory in my mind. I was interviewing Representative Darren Madison here on one of these podcasts, and I asked him a similar question about fear. He said, I'm a black man in America. I felt fear every day of my life.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think fear is a piece of it for sure. But for me, at least, being afraid pisses me off.
Hmm.
It just makes me angry to think that I should be afraid. It makes me angry to think that anybody should be afraid.
Right.
And the angrier I get, the more motivated I am. So, yeah, was there fear? Sure, there's fear. And I think it's time to be courageous.
Absolutely. Especially if you're not an immigrant, undocumented here in the United States, or even documented, or even a Latino citizen in this country, you're, able to
get... If you are not white,
yeah.
Let's just be real. If you are not white in this country right now, the Supreme Court has basically said you can be profiled and stopped, maybe even arrested, for no other reason than being not white.
Yeah, grabbed.
There is something really screwed up about that.
Absolutely. Grabbed, put in a van by someone with a mask on and heavily armed. So.
Don't even have to identify themselves. That's crazy.
It's like being in Pinochet's Chile right now. For white folks, especially white folks of privilege, it's time to step up.
Past time, I'd say.
Yeah, long past time. I do see some critics. There are always critics of protests. Some critics of the No Kings protest were saying, there's no platform being put forward. There's no vision. How do you respond to that?
Wow. I would say they can't see. If we are not going to spell out specific things because, as I said, in our little group that was organizing, we have a diversity of opinions, and we are not going to agree on everything. Now is not the time for us to quibble about what we're for and what we're against and be purist about who can be part of our movement and who can't. That is not now. What we have a common, I don't want to say this word, but I'm gonna. We have a common enemy.
Right.
And it's MAGA. Trump is just the figurehead. This is so much bigger than him.
Oh, it's
and let's talk about Stephen Miller. Let's talk about Voight. Scott Bessent, who was supposed to be the adult in the room.
Yeah.
Right down the line, Kash Patel, Bondi, it's crazy what's happening.
Yeah, and it's part of a long planned, strategically worked out white nationalist movement.
Yep. Yep.
And Trump is at the front of it and in service to it. And it's not going to go away overnight.
No, it's not going to go away. It's not going to go away. And so he does things like tear down the east wing of the White House. Distraction. I mean, I'm sorry that that happened. I really am sorry that that happened.
I mean, he is such a vulgarian.
It's not. I mean, plow up the Rose Garden. Okay, fine. That's not really what's happening. It's over here where people are being snatched off the street,
right,
where peaceful protests are being exploited and called violent to use the Insurrection Act to send in troops.
I still think that's coming, too.
Well, you know, he backed off on Chicago, which to me is proof that our power is bigger than he thinks it is. And the pushback is bigger than...
I mean, the pushback has been impressive. People in the streets, you know, confronting ICE nonviolently, but just getting in front of their trucks, getting in their faces, and telling them to go home. We don't want you here.
We don't want you here.
Yeah.
We don't need you here.
Yeah. I mean, we need more of that. That's really courageous and great. Well, what's next for the No Kings movement?
Well, what's next is people, as you said, getting involved, staying involved, taking action, stepping back and breathing when you need to, but not stopping. We have to keep pushing forward. This is not going to go away just one protest at a time. The momentum is building, and people feel it. And so I would say, you know, make sure that you are speaking truth. As a matter of fact, Robert Reich, in his Substack this week, had his column was, "What do we do now?" He has 10 things to do. I put it in the OAP newsletter that's coming out tomorrow because he spells it out. And I think all the things that he says are things that we can do. And we have more agency in Wisconsin than many people do.
Why is that?
Well, we have fairer maps than we had before.
And you worked your heart out on that.
I did, and it's still going on. We don't have a permanent solution. So the other rally I was part of last week was on Thursday, when we, the League of Women Voters Ad Hoc Redistricting Committee and the Fair Maps Coalition, actually physically delivered our draft proposal for Independent Redistricting Commission to legislators. We did hearings, community hearings all around the state after 2 years of research and writing this draft proposal. We took it to voters. We got input. We made adjustments. We've got a draft proposal. We took it to the Capitol on Thursday. We announced it. Senator Jeff Smith spoke, as well as Representatives Deb Andraca and Francesca Hong, Deborah Kronmiller from the League, me, and Yuseli Flores from the Fair Maps Coalition.
Excellent.
And then the volunteers who were there took those hard copies and delivered them. So we're waiting for an LRB, which is a Legislative Reference Bureau number, so we can start to say to legislators, sign on to this, support it. So we have an independent redistricting commission after 2030, for the 2030 census. So there's one place we have agency to keep our maps from being gerrymandered again after the next census. Also, we have split government here.
Right.
So things can't just be rubber stamped. We're not Texas, right? The governor can't decide that he's going to redraw the congressional maps to help Trump keep a majority. And we also have a more balanced state legislature that allows us to really push on the things that we care about. Just this week, Moms Demand Action was at the Capitol. And they had a really big rally. So, there are places that we can push that other states don't have the same sort of leverage. And we need to take advantage of that every opportunity we can.
And then what about you? I've been to about 4 retirement parties for you. You can't spell retire.
No, I can't. I'm my father's daughter. Don't know how to stop.
He was a preacher.
Yes, he was. And he was president of North Carolina Common Cause for 13 years and very much involved with Witness for Peace, went all over the world with Witness for Peace. So, yeah, and Habitat. They had to retire him. They told him a lie. They said, "We can't insure you anymore." And mostly it was that he was over 80 and climbing up on ladders, and they were like, "Sam, get the hell down from there." Yeah. So
well, you'll be doing it when you're 82.
Well, I actually hope I learn before then.
Well, I really admire all the work you do, Carlene, and thanks again for being my guest here on Wisconsin Forward.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me, Matt.
It's great to see you. Great to hear from you. With me now is Earl Ingram, host of the What's Going On podcast on Civic Media. Earl emceed the No Kings rally in Milwaukee on October 18th. Earl Ingram, welcome back to the Wisconsin Forward podcast. It's been a while.
Listen, I'm honored and privileged. Matt, I have a great deal of admiration and respect for you and your work and the kind of work you do. And so to have this privilege and honor to grace your airways once again is... It means a lot. And when you reached out to me, I was, again, more than honored and privileged and thankful to have the opportunity.
Right back at you, Earl. I'm grateful for it as well. I saw some footage. I wasn't in Milwaukee. I was here in Dane County, went to four rallies here. But I saw some footage of the Milwaukee rally, and it looked like a Civic Media reunion up there. You had Maggie Dawn speaking and Angela Lang, who's a frequent contributor. That must have been fun.
Yeah, you know. It really reminded me, I'll soon be 72 years old. So it reminded me of the Vietnam rallies, and the civil rights marches and rallies, and really to have the opportunity, I was too young to really be a part of it, those things other than just tagging along. But to be able to be at the heart of this meant an awful lot.
Well, why did it mean so much to you?
Well, because if you were around during those years, is judging by the color of your hair.
Ooh, don't get that.
Nothing else. I would say that you were around at those times. It was a time when our nation came together, so to speak, and realized the importance of a collective. And because of those times, Matt, you and I and our generation were able to really have the kind of lives that we were able to live. And I really thought at that point in time, foolishly, that those things that we fought for and were fought for by our generations before us, that they would remain that way. And now I realize, I've learned that, you know, all of those things, Bill of Rights, Constitution, Declaration of Independence, all those things have to be fought for generationally. And this showed me that.
Yeah, I mean, everything seems to be on the chopping block right now.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that's just crazy. I mean, I'm glad my parents aren't around. My dad fought against the Nazis in Germany. My mom was active in the civil rights movement. I mean, the shocking thing about this moment, or one of the many shocking things, is that, you know, everyone has a father or a grandfather, or for younger generations, a great grandfather who fought fascism. And now fascism is here, and Trump is going after the anti-fascists. It's just it's a crazy world.
You know, Matt, not only is it a crazy world, the fact that he's only been there 9 months, and barring some unforeseen circumstances, we've got 3-4 years. And what these people have been able to do, Matt, that is so frightening, is they came in running and they put all these things in place inside of 9 months. And it gives them 3 years to cultivate it, to drill down and to tighten the screws. And that's kind of where my biggest fear lies, Matt. Not for you and I, because you and I have been able to live the American dream and those kinds of things. But for our grandchildren and great-grandchildren, I hate to even imagine what this is going to be.
Yeah, everything is up for grabs and on the line. And that's why I think it was so important to have these mass rallies on October 18th. You know, there are some people out there, though, who are cynics, who say that protests don't matter, protests don't accomplish anything. or folks who went to the anti-Walker pro-labor protest in 2011 said, look, we had 110,000 people out there, didn't do a damn thing, so why should I protest now? How do you respond to cynics like that?
Well, I'm a person who believes that we're at a point in time, Matt, where the only saving grace are the American people. Politicians can't fix this now. If we're sitting back waiting on Democratic officials to fix this, I'm sorry, the cavalry's not coming. It's the American people. It's the rank and file American people out in the street, because fascism has been defeated in other nations by exactly what we're talking about, a show of force of the American people who say, we've had enough of this, we're not going to tolerate it, and it's going to take the American people, not just once every 6 months. The American people are going to have to show that they are up to the task and willing to stay the course to change this.
You know, I think that's really important, this idea of sustained protests. And I wanted you to reflect on the positive experience in Milwaukee in the late 1960s when the NAACP Youth Council for 200 consecutive nights was out there protesting for fair housing. Talk about that a bit.
Well, you know, it does go back to even during Dr. King and Selma. And over 320 days, people refuse to catch the bus to work. And they would walk miles. And the people were able to organize and move people and get people to their jobs because the people came together and said, we're not going to tolerate it. Well, here in this city, and many people may not know this, but Matt, I remember there was a guy here, a police chief, named Harold Breyer. And people may not know it, but we had our own Bull Connor. Milwaukee was called the Selma of the North. And so as people mobilized and organized and led by Father James Groppi, a Catholic minister, who organized and who knew Dr. King and brought Dr. King to this city many times, and the people marched across the 20th Street Viaduct and were met with rocks and eggs and stones and all sorts of things. And of course, during those days, it was no violence. Dr. King's marches were all about civil disobedience. And so it was a horrible, horrible time in the history of our city. And now you're looking at a time when we've got people at the helm of our government who say, let's do away with history. We don't want to know about that horrific point in time because it makes people feel bad. Well, you know, those who fail to remember history are doomed to repeat it. I didn't say it, but the person who said it was 100% correct, and that time is happening before our eyes.
And we have, unlike folks in Germany or in Italy in the 1930s, we have the luxury of seeing that history, studying that history, and learning from it. And to resist is just such a moral imperative at this point. And I'm wondering what kinds of nonviolent protests you're envisioning. One thing I have in my mind is economic, is a general strike at some point, or people boycotting. You know, we saw the what happened when Jimmy Kimmel was taken off the air and Disney stock went down 5%. I mean, maybe that's the only language those folks understand.
Well, you know, Matt, one thing about being an old goat, we've been around the block a few times. And so when you look at what's transpiring in our nation right now, this divide the people. We've seen this before. And so this dividing of the American people, again, trying to divide us by race, trying to divide us by social norms, trying to divide us by our religious beliefs. All of those things that are transpiring and taking place in this country right now are all by design. And I'll tell you, Matt, the biggest mistake I think that we're all making is we're looking at this one guy and we're looking at him. Excuse my French, but he looks like a buffoon and he sounds like one. And we're wondering, how can he do all of this? He's not the person. And because we look at it, because he's the person we see on television, he's the guy who's murmuring all that crazy stuff. It's the people behind him who've been organized and working on this, Matt, for decades.
Right.
And they've been laying in the wait, waiting for their opportunity. And so their opportunity is now. And so they're not satisfied with a four-year run with Donald Trump. The things that they have in store for you and I and the American people are long-term, Matt. They're for generations.
Yeah, you know, I'm remembering just last night I interviewed an author, Catherine Stewart, who wrote a book called Money, Lies, and God, about the decades-long preparation that the far right in this country has laid down, the foundation they laid down for this Trump coup that's happening right now. And yeah, you're absolutely right. It's been a long time in the making, and Trump is just the person at the tip of the spear here. And yet it is a fundamental question. I mean, those folks don't want democracy. They don't want equal rights. They don't want civil rights. They don't want sexual equality. They want to turn the clocks way, way back. And so that's what we're fighting for right now. And I'm just wondering, you know, how are we going to be able to sustain and even grow the level of protest that we saw on October 18th?
You know, Matt, it reminded me, I had the distinct privilege and honor to do a radio show from Capitol Hill. And actually right next door to the United States Supreme Court, when the Affordable Care Act was being debated at the United States Supreme Court, I was, I think, the only non-syndicated talk show host who was given that privilege and honor to be there. And I never will forget walking through the throngs of, what were they called? They were called the Tea Party.
Yeah.
And so they were in this park, and my wife and I were walking through, and I saw all these people. And Matt, they were from your and my generation. And they were a little bit older than me at the time, but they were there and they were protesting. And they wanted things to change. And they forced some changes in the Republican Party. You remember those things, right?
Yeah, I remember going to a Tea Party rally at the Capitol here. I was doing some, I was out with my reporters, Pat, and interviewing right. people who were there. And yeah, you could see the mobilization happening. And those people weren't playing.
And I said all that to say this. I've seen your and my generation back at it. Many who decades ago, half a century ago, were out. And we've been sitting on our couches and we've been enjoying our laurels and having lived a good life. We're now back on the street. What I saw on last Saturday were people from your and my generation who have seen this and know the inherent dangers of it. And so that's who this is. It's certainly being organized by a younger group of people, but the masses of the people who are out here are from your and my generation. That bodes well.
Are you upset that there weren't younger people there?
I think part of what is transpiring is to think that younger people understand the magnitude of what is transpiring. My sons are 47, 46, 38. Hey, Matt, I guess that makes me an old goat. but those generations are trying to make it through and navigate through things you and I didn't have to go through.
Right.
They're trying to get a piece of the American dream. And so we've got, my belief is we have to fight this battle because it's the battle to fight. And as you and I, you know, enter into, and our generation enters towards the twilight, the baby boomers of our lives, we've got to fight this battle for them. Hmm. And whether they're there or not, this battle has to be waged, and it has to be waged by those of us who know what's at stake, who know what has transpired in this country.
Earl, what do you say to people who are scared that, you know, if they go out on a protest, they're going to get arrested or beat up by the cops or ICE?
So let me say this. I said this on the stage. They said that there were going to be Hamas supporters. They said that they are going to be criminals and they're going to be, you know, Antifa's going to be there. And I looked out amongst the crowd and I said, I don't see any criminals out here. And you know why? Because I don't see any billionaires amongst the crowd. If we want to talk about criminals, it happens to be people who don't understand that sharing the wealth of a nation is the right thing and the moral thing to do. And to hoard it all as if it all belongs to you is the wrong thing to do. So if there are criminals, those criminals weren't with those people who were gathered. They were the average, everyday, rank-and-file American.
Mm-hmm. Who had the courage to show up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and we need...
And the last thing, you know, Matt, that I want to say before, you know, we part, is I said that 57 years ago, a man that I admired and still admire to this day and who I worked to patterning myself after through service, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, said these words. Somewhere I read of the rights to freedom of speech. Somewhere I read about the rights to freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the rights of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the beauty and the greatness of America is the right to protest for rights. All of those things are being challenged right now as we speak. And so people have to understand we've been here before, some of us, and there's no short victory. There are no quick victories. It's a protracted struggle. Mm-hmm. And so we got to put on our big boy pants and be ready.
Absolutely. That is one of my favorite passages from Dr. King. It was part of his speech that Memphis. He gave in Memphis the night before he was assassinated.
Absolutely.
And a lot of the media, they just play the end where he says, you know, I've been to the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I've seen the promised land. But they don't play that early part where he talks about somewhere I read about our rights that are being violated. Earl Ingram,
we're facing that right now.
Yeah, totally. And I'm so grateful you brought that quote forward, because it's not only a moving quote, but it's so relevant to what we're dealing with. Today, I've been speaking with Earl Ingram. He's the host of the What's Going On podcast on Civic Media. It's been great speaking with you again, Earl. Let's do it again.
It's always great talking to you, my friend, until we meet again.
Absolutely. Hang in there. Well, that's going to have to be it for this episode of the Wisconsin Forward podcast on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Matt Rothschild, and I want to thank our two guests, Carlene Beshin and Earl Ingram. I also want to thank my engineer and producer, Dom Lee, who's always great to work with. And I want to thank Sage Weil of Civic Media for giving me this platform. But most of all, I want to thank you for listening. I'll be back soon with another episode of the Wisconsin Forward podcast, where we'll be discussing the fight back in the courts and where that leaves us. You won't want to miss that one. Till then, take care.